This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And good morning, one and all. Here in Toronto, as I'm gazing out from the Zoomerplex toward Liberty Street, it's pretty cloudy out there. I wonder if there's any sunshine showing up in Prince Edward County. Hey, Charlie, what are you doing?
I think I'm looking at the same sky you're looking at, Frankie.
Okay.
It's pretty overcast, and we do have about a 30% chance of snow today, and then it's up to about a 70% chance overnight. So
has it been really as cold there as it has been here?
Minus 16 right now.
Oh, all righty. Let me get the phone numbers on the air because I'm glancing at our monitor. No calls yet. But let's fix that. In Toronto, if you want to get a hold of Charlie Dobbin to ask a question about gardening, whatever, 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Please remember our little mantra, call early, call often, one question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, let Carlos, our operator, know. He'll pass that along to me, and I'll reach for the bell. And you'll hear that before you hit the airwaves. Okay. Hey, we got a number of things we want to cover off in this little section
we chat up the first start
of the... I'd asked you, hey, when the heck is that backyard bird count coming up?
A good memory, too, Frankie. It's called the Great Backyard Bird Count. It's brought to you to all of the world. It's an international event. So Birds of Canada sponsors it here, and of course, the Cornell Lab, which is a bird lab, and the Audubon Society is all part of it. And it's this weekend.
Wow.
So it's a four-day event, started yesterday, the 12th, and runs through until Monday. And like I said, it's all over the world, and it's very cool. For anybody who's on their computers right now or has access to the internet, it's just a website, birdcount, one word, birdcount.org. And if you go to that website, you will see what's going on because, of course, people see birds. So what it is it's a 10-minute window. You go for a walk. You can sit outside. You can even just look out the window. But it's 10 minutes. What varieties of birds do you see and how many of them do you see? And then you send that information in, and the sightings are – the data is all collected for this 4 days. And right now it's showing – sightings in the last 24 hours right on their website because people send their information in, and you can do it multi times. You can do it 10 times a day if you want for the next 4 days, or just do it once. Of course, keep in mind COVID protocols. So if you're out there with fellow birders, make sure you've got a mask in place, and social distancing is all part of being together. But it's a very wonderful, safe activity for the entire family, for anybody to do over the next few days. So get out there and count some birds.
Okay. I want to mention this. We had a nice note from Maureen Boyce. She says, "Dear Charlie, am I ever glad I took your advice about ordering the Stokes Seeds catalog? I was very down, and it had been a rough winter, and that catalog cheered me right up. Love the tips, the recipes, the colored pictures of flowers and vegetables." And she says, "Now I'm dreaming about spring and gardening." Thanks for that little note, Maureen. And that's a darn good bit of advice that folks would be wise to kind of accept, huh?
Yeah. And then Maureen followed up that email with another little email and said, "You know what else I love about this catalog? The paper order form. Imagine."
Right, yeah.
So you can order by paper and mail in your order, or you can order on the web for StokesSeeds.com. Actually, it's StokesSeeds.com is the website.
Okie dokie. And of course, can't forget that tomorrow, Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. What do you got planned?
I'm not telling.
I was going to say, oh, romantic guy.
Yeah, well, there you go. What else? Oh, I wanted to mention, we're talking about birds. So 2 days ago, and it was really bitterly cold at that point, too, we've got this lovely pond, as you know, a very, very large pond on the property. And I looked out about 8 o'clock in the morning. Here are four white swans sitting out in the middle of this 33-acre pond on the snow, waiting patiently for spring.
For
I guess.
Melt. Exactly. Aww.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're probably scoping out where they want to build their nest.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Because they start that pretty soon.
That's...
The swans, we had very, very intricate nests. It took them a long time to build it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. Did you notice I'm looking at the clock, and we better move along here. We're getting the lines filled up on the phone lines. I know we've got a number of emails to deal with as well. So let's, and we'll fit in a little note maybe along the way about the orchid.
Not much to say there. It's been, the Orchid Society had to cancel their annual Valentine's Day event.
Okay.
Good enough.
This year. Yes. Enough said. We're going to be back in just a couple of moments. Charlie Dobbin and yours truly, Frank Proctor. Thank you so much for tuning our way here on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, we're off to Pickering right off the bat here, and say hi and good morning to Bill. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks very much for taking my call. It is a kind of a gray morning, but we're getting along here.
Good for you.
Good.
I've got a question about basil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of curly-leafed one, I think. We had it in a kitchen window, a west window, which is one of those kind of little bay windows.
Uh-huh.
But we keep our house fairly cool in the winter, and then save oil and all that, or save whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's around 19 degrees. So in the window, it was dropping down to 16 and stuff, and they didn't look too happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved them over to the kitchen island on a very, very bright wind, bright kitchen. We've got windows mm-hmm. almost all the way around. So they seem happier. Mm-hmm. My little thermometer at the bottom says it's about 20 in there most of the time now. But I have lights downstairs where I'm growing geraniums, which we've talked about. I'm wondering if I should move them down under the lights, and the lights are on about 12 hours a day.
Well, with your new location, are you seeing new growth on the basil plant on the island?
Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit. Yeah, they're better than they were.
Right.
They were getting black around the edges on the cold window.
Exactly. And I think you're exactly right. It was the temperature that was causing that. So, you know what? Off the top of my head, I'd say it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other, whether it's the bright island where it's warmer or it's under the lights where, you know, you've got your 12 hours of light. And I assume a reasonably warm temperature in the basement as well,
it's
similar to upstairs.
It's closer to the furnace room, and it's generally 20 down there.
Yeah. So either one, I mean, you might, I guess I was going to say you might forget them downstairs, but maybe you wouldn't because you're looking after the geraniums down there.
Yeah.
I like to keep my herbs close to the kitchen just because I'm more spontaneous to use them when they're right there. Nip off. See, too, with basil, you want to nip the tip, right, the growing tips. To make them branch.
About, I guess, 8 inches high.
Right. So at any time, take that little top, those top leaves and the top little bud, just with your thumbnail and your finger, rip that up, throw that in with your eggs for breakfast, and then you'll see side branching. So it's nice to, don't let the basil grow as a single stem little tree. Encourage it to be bushier and more, it'll be more dense and obviously give you more leaves if you do
that.
Yes,
I have about four or five stalks each from the, just above the surface of the ground.
Okay,
no leaves on them until you get up towards the top, though.
Right. Well, they've lost their lower leaves just again because it's, you know, the days are getting longer. We're almost at 12 hours in our world of light and dark. So I'd say either one. And it was a good idea to get him out of the window because basil does not like the cold.
No, it didn't seem.
Yeah, cold. Good to hear. Thanks for sharing that.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bill.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Have a great day, and thank you for joining us here on Zoomer Radio. Boy, did you ever receive a whack of emails.
I like when you say that. A whack.
Yeah.
A whack of emails.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to pick up one that's been in our bin here for maybe a week or more, but it's from Linda Moore. gardenia the subject. She says, last spring I bought a large gardenia plant in the pot for my yard. I purchased it because of its healthy, shiny leaves and because it had 5 or 6 buds and a lot of new growth. Really didn't do much all summer. The buds emerged, but only one at a time. Flowers were smaller than I expected, although they had a beautiful scent. Because the plant was so large, I couldn't move because of the weight of the pot. I just left it there in the planter in my yard. Plan was to dig it up, replace it in the spring. However, it hasn't dropped any leaves. Still looks much the same as when I bought it. It has a bit of snow on it now. Looks a bit wilted, but I keep expecting it to either turn brown or drop its leaves, but it doesn't. My question is it, she'd send you a picture, obviously, is it an evergreen? Why is it not reacting to the weather? Well, there you go, from Linda Moore.
Well, good question. You know what it is? It's just frozen solid. It is dead. It's not gonna turn green. As soon as it starts to thaw a bit, all those leaves will just fall off. Kind of like kale. If anybody's got ornamental cabbage or kale in their garden, it looks reasonably perky right now, but as soon as we start a thaw, it'll all just turn to mush. And that's the same with the gardenia. That is a tender tropical plant that does not survive our winters outside.
Okay, good enough. We're going to go back to our phone lines in just a moment and say hi to Lorraine calling in from a beautiful Bob Cajun area. So you stand by for that. And we're back shortly here, Charlie Dobbin and yours truly, Frank, here on a Saturday morning on Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Boy, several months from now, a lot of folks are going to be heading up to cottage country in that area around Bob Cajun. That's where Lorraine is located and calling us now here in The Garden Show. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Excellent.
Good. I know it's a bit early, but I have this honeysuckle vine that I've had for over 2 years. I get beautiful foliage on it, and it really grows well, but I haven't yet to have a flower.
Oh, that's weird. Is it getting any sunshine?
It's in the south side of the house. It gets sun all day long. And it's on a trellis, but it's on the side of the trellis are planter boxes, and it sits inside the planter box. But
okay, so it is potted into the planter box, but the planter box is on the ground, basically, at ground level.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, no flowers. So tell me about your soil. Did you do any amending to the soil when you planted it 2 years ago?
Well, I probably put new soil in there when I did it because, when I did the new plant, I would put new soil in, yes. And I do fertilize it.
Okay. Any idea what kind of fertilizer you might have used?
It could be, I don't think it's Miracle-Gro. It's one I bought from the nursery, and I'm not sure what it is.
Okay, because I'm just wondering if maybe it's a fertilizer with too much nitrogen. So you know how fertilizers have 3 numbers on the package?
Yes.
It could be 10, 10, 10. It could be, 52, 24, 38 kind of numbers. But there's always those 3 numbers. And the first number is nitrogen. And nitrogen really encourages green growth. So we get lots of leaves on our plants. We use high nitrogen fertilizer on our lawns because, of course, we want lots of green growth on our lawns. I'm wondering if maybe the fertilizer you're using is not really designed for flowering plants, but is more of an all-purpose type fertilizer. And so what I would do is I'd use a fertilizer that actually says for flowering plants, and it'll typically have the middle number twice as high as the first number. So it might be 15, 30, 15 as an example. And that will encourage flowers as opposed to, lots and lots of leaves. I can only think it's probably something nutritional because if the plant is looking good and growing well and sounds like it's in a good spot, it might just be strictly a nutrient issue.
Okay. Do I trim this back every spring?
Well, remember, if you take the tips off of a vine, because a vine grows long tendrils, like long stems from the base. So just taking the tips off, just, an inch off of every tip will, again, cause that plant to be a bushier plant. It'll send out side shoots. So it'll be a more dense column growing up the trellis, which I think most people like, rather than just having 1 or 2 or 3 sort of tendrils to work with.
Right.
And of course, you need to make sure it does hold. It doesn't, honeysuckle wines don't really hold on by themselves. You usually have to kind of guide them through the trellis or use some kind of a tie to tie them up and keep them up off the ground. But they're lovely, lovely, fragrant flowers when they come out, and typically the hummingbirds love them as well. So you
know, that's why I planted it, and yet I haven't had flower.
Good stuff. Well, so that's what you need. You need to encourage flowers. Now, remember, do your trimming early in the season and then no trimming after that, because you don't want to err on the side of trimming off where the flowers are coming.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I get so many vines that I do seem to trim them back.
Ah, there you go. You might be cutting off the flowers doing that.
Okay.
So, yeah, so cut it in the spring so you don't have to cut it again. And you know, and if it's really unwieldy, then cut harder, cut down lower. Don't be afraid, because you are the boss, right?
Okay.
You're in charge of that plant. That plant is not in charge of you.
Hey, thank you so much. I'll give that a try this spring.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lorraine, and have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in. I have a note here from Jean DeVries, who actually writes in behalf not only herself, but her mom, who listens in from Mississauga. Jean is in Orangeville. She says, hi, Charlie, hope you're doing well. I've listened to your show for years, so I hope you hear that a lot, and we love it, she says. Anyway, I've attached some photos of two plants my mom has in her living room. Now, they were part of a funeral arrangement for my brother, who passed away in 2015, so I'm sure she's particularly wanting them to survive. And just the last few months, these yellow spots appeared on the leaves. Mom told me the arrangement was repotted about a year ago, so I'm wondering if perhaps there's a vitamin soil deficiency happening here. You can see from the photos that she sent you, there are two different plants in the same pot. They both have the yellow spots. We didn't think it was a fungus, as the spots are so smooth, but we can't understand why the spots appeared on both plants. Anyway, Mom has a pot close to her living room window with a western exposure, not the brightest location away from the window, but the plant appears to be growing regardless. Any thoughts?
Okay, I love this. This is a great email. And of course, as you mentioned, Jean sent not only the email, but she sent some photographs as well to show me what was going on. It turns out this gift planter that her mom originally received obviously had a number of plants in it. And then, you know, these gift planters always get overgrown at some point. So you have to pull all the plants out and then give them their own pots. So two of the plants that she's referring to are both, the genus is called Croton, so C-R-O-T-O-N. They don't look like the same plant because one has long, narrow leaves. The other one has more oval leaves, more traditional leaves. But they are both Crotons. They're just different cultivars. And I guess what's happened is where they had it originally, this plant was quite green. And where it was originally, the light levels were quite low. And that's why they were just green plants. Now, with this repotting and moving towards the western window, a little more light, we are getting the traditional beautiful coloration on the crotons. So speckles of yellow are very absolutely normal. There's no disease, no infestation going on. The plant is showcasing how pretty it can be, given that it's getting a little more light. So the long, narrow leaves, I believe that cultivar is called Gold Finger, which is why, you know, they're long, narrow leaves and they get the gold splotches on them, so-called Gold Finger. And then the other one, I'm not so positive what the actual cultivar might be, but yeah, don't worry about it. She's doing fine. The more light you give them, the more color you're going to get. Keep watering. It looks like they've been looking after them in terms of water. The one thing that Croton can get is spider mites in the dead of winter. So watch carefully for any evidence of webbing. Mist with a mister, consider a pebble tray from below just to keep the humidity high around those plants, and be happy. There's nothing wrong with them.
Okay, that's good. Oh, and Jean has a little note here. Says, how are we able to hear your response if we, quote, miss the moment on the radio? Well, that's where the podcasts come into it, right?
Absolutely.
Just go to
anytime,
Zoom.
Anytime, day
ahead.
Or night.
Yeah, you explain how that works.
Yeah, so a podcast is basically a recording of the show. And you need a computer or you need access to the internet. You can use your phone. You can any way that you can get onto the internet. And it's just going to the Zoomer website. And from that point, looking at hosts or shows or podcasts, there's multi-choices across the top which tab you want to choose. many of the shows all over the AM 740 are podcasts. the garden show is definitely one of them. And you just click and pick a date. They're all there. 13 and a half years worth of podcasts are all there in the archives. So you've got lots of good listening and a great opportunity to listen back. If I talk too fast or you miss something, just remember, you can always go backwards.
Excellent. Thank you, Charlie. All righty, off to Georgetown we go, and there's Norm. Hiya, Norm, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. How's Charlie this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Very good. I've got six orchids blooming in the front window here, mm-hmm. and some of them are 3 or 4 years old. But all of, I've got a great number of the air roots that are drying up, and I have no idea what I'm doing. Is there an age limit to orchids?
No, not at all. No, you can keep those for years and years and years. So if those aerial roots, the roots that are above ground, are looking kind of wizened, then it means you're not watering enough, or your humidity is not high enough. I tell you, nothing makes an orchid purr more than getting a pail of water, letting it sit out overnight to bring it to room temperature, put a little orchid fertilizer into that pail of water, not much, it's, you know, just as per the directions on the orchid fertilizer package, and then dunking the pot of orchids right into the pail, holding the pot down until all the air bubbles have risen to the surface and the plant is thoroughly saturated. And then I carefully lift it up out of the pail, let it sit in the sink for a couple of minutes while it drains out lots of extra moisture, and then back into its regular location. And they literally purr. They are so happy with that.
That's a great description.
Okay, I've not been doing anything any different to what I have normally. Just this year, the air roots have dried up. But I'll try that. I'll dump them in a pail and see what happens.
Well, and Norm, it could be if you've had them for a number of years, they're probably in the same pots from when you
That's
got
right.
them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, they are perhaps getting to the point of pot bound. So that's one of the reasons. I mean, if you're doing everything the same as you always did, recognize the plants are bigger, they have more roots, they have higher needs for water and nutrients as they get bigger. So it might be one of those things where you need to think, not necessarily now, but in the next month or 6 weeks, about providing slightly bigger pots for these plants with the proper media, not regular potting soil, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
Okay, Norm. We have another email to deal with here. Eileen Ackerman says, "Hi, Charlie. Love your very informative show. Help, please. I'm keeping this Sarissa. Is that the right pronunciation?"
You know what? Good question. I have never heard of Sarissa, so carry on.
I keep this Sarissa in a south-facing room under grow light for 12 hours daily, keeping soil moist, and started spraying every morning. Can't seem to stop the leaves from turning black at the tips and progressing up the leaf, getting lots of new growth with black tips. Any help you can be on this?
Right. So thanks for your email, Eileen. Good question. I have never heard of Sarissa. So when I go to my books, it doesn't jump out at me at all. I go to the web, and there's a lot of talk about Sarissa as a plant for bonsai. So bonsai plants, the ones we choose to bonsai being a dwarfing method of growing plants, typically the plants we choose for bonsaiing are small leaves, dense growth, pretty tough plants, generally speaking. But this picture doesn't look at all like the pictures on the web. So I guess I'm a bit confused. But right away, black leaves, just like our first caller, Bill, when he mentioned that his basil in the window, the tips of the leaves are turning black. Usually when we see black on leaves in the middle of winter, it's got to do with temperature. So I'm wondering, Eileen, if perhaps this tropical plant that you refer to as Sarissa is in too low of a temperature. So it could be that. Also, be aware of watering. When we see black, we suspect fungus. And when we think, why would there be a fungal disease on my plant? It can be from too much water. Rarely do we see black from too little water. We'll see yellow leaves from too little water, but not usually black. So, and of course, look closely. For all I know, there could be some kind of an infestation, though again, insects don't generally cause leaves to turn black. But, you know, look closely, trim out dead stuff, give it a good you know, sort of one of those, again, you can thorough kind of a watering. We're at the time now, middle of February. Let's crank out our fertilizer that we haven't used since last summer and mix some of that up. And when it's time to water our plants, let's start using some fertilizer to encourage new growth. But be aware of the temperatures. Keep plants away from the windows that are just not going to be able to handle low temperatures, because it's always colder by the glass. You know, even a poinsettia is not happy right near the glass. They will do the same thing. You'll see it blackening on their tips of their leaves, and the leaves will drop from low temperatures. So that is what I think.
Okie dokie. We're going to take a little bit of a break here. Have to have some words from our sponsors, bless their hearts. And we'll come back to say hi to Joanne in Midland, calling into the Garden Show here on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And I'm Frank Proctor, the sous chef of the garden, and we have Joanne online from Midland. Good morning, Joanne. Hi, Joanne. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
No, that's not, I'm me. Where's Joanne? Morning, Joanne.
Hello.
Oh, are you there? Okay, Joanne, go ahead.
Hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I have a real lemon plant that our kids gave us last fall, and it's in a south window, but the leaves are falling off it, but it has one shoot of growth on the far side towards the window, and I'm not sure if we're watering it too much. How far down do you have to go to determine if it needs watering?
How big is the pot, roughly?
About 8 inches or 10 inches, maybe.
Right, so it's a good-sized pot. Okay, so a couple things. What I would do, Joanne, is I would go to my local, you know, Home Hardware, Canadian Tire, or Garden Center, and buy what is called a moisture meter. The moisture meter is a probe. It is about 6 to 8 inches long. It's got a little dial or a little gauge at the top. And what you do is you push that probe into the soil right down as far as you can, and it will tell you what the moisture levels are like well below the surface, because we can really only feel the surface or feel just below the surface with our fingers. So that is a great tool when you have larger plants that are just too big to pick up and feel the weight.
Yeah.
I often do that by weight. I figure out whether plants need water just by how heavy they are. The other thing is, do turn that plant, make sure that it's getting light. So even if it's every Sunday, turn it 180 degrees so that you're balancing the light. They do very naturally drop lemon trees, any of the tropical citrus plants. They will drop some of their older leaves at this time of year, but you should see new growth on the tips. So it should not be dropping its green tips, but it should very naturally and normally drop some of its older leaves in the center of the plant. Okay.
Okay. What about fertilizing now? Yeah. When do we start that?
It's time. Where days are getting longer, the plants know it. So yes, indeed, put in regular fertilizing about every 2 weeks, not more than that, with a flowering plant fertilizer when you're watering, that will encourage more growth as well.
Okay, thank you very much,
Joanne. Thank you very much.
All righty, take care of things in Midland for us there. Back to a kind of a fun email here. I'll get to that in a moment here. Evelyn Gray writes, I have continuously bloomed my hibiscus and geraniums in my living room window since last summer. Am I going to pay this coming summer? Can these plants continue to bloom throughout the year, or must they go dormant at some point?
Did you want to read the PS now?
Okay, sure. I was going to wait till after to do that, but she says, Frank, P.S., I thought that your special socks featured on today's webcast were really cute, which prompted me to put on some other different socks.
Let's see them.
beer socks. Can you see them there?
Well, I will. There's a bit of a delay on my feed.
Oh,
so
okay.
If you just hold them up and then put them down, I'm going to see them in a minute here. Yeah. You're going to stick your leg up. Oh, there you go.
Steins, as it were.
There we go.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that, Evelyn. Meantime, back to the question. What do you think there?
Well, so good question. And no, do not worry, Evelyn. Oh, yeah, I'm seeing your socks. Holy beer steins.
Yeah.
Those are great. Good stuff, Frankie. So, no, don't worry about it. Geraniums, hibiscus, good examples of flowering perennial plants. And so what I would be aware of, though, is if they're flowering in the window and you leave them all through the spring flowering beautifully and then summer comes and you take them outside, at some point, particularly the hibiscus, is going to get too big. And you're going to want to cut it back, and then you're going to go, you know, how do I cut it back without cutting all the flowers off? So what I would do is, I know you're going to hate doing this, Evelyn, it's just something you got to do in the spring now or in the next month or so. Get out your pruners and cut those plants back, even if it means cutting off flowers, because they will flower more once they start to grow again. But you've got to shape the plants, and pruning is about shaping, helping them to be a balanced plant, good, you know, dense, you know, full growth, if you will, no straggly shoots sending off in all kinds of directions. And of course, maybe these geraniums, the plan is to take cuttings anyway. So this, we're getting to that time of year, you could be cutting down your geraniums and starting cuttings from the pieces that you cut down. So depending on what your plan is for those, but for sure, get out those pruners and get that hibiscus cut down sometime in the next month or so.
All righty. We can go to a phone line here right now from Cambridge. Lorraine on the line. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning. I have first a comment, not to turn the program into a bird place, but a few days ago I saw a pileated woodpecker in my sister's big old maple tree, and that's the first time I've seen a pileated woodpecker for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's a big one. It's about 18 inches long.
Wow.
Yeah, she'd heard it for years but never seen it. Anyway, my question is about, I've had a sassafras tree come up, and I rather like the name, and I rather like the look of the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept it, and I trimmed it, and a couple of times I've trimmed it. Where I trimmed, there's blackening of the bark, and it doesn't fill in like other trees would have done when, you know, when I take a branch off.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
No. Why that would happen?
Wow.
Okay.
So, and you're sure it's sassafras, you can know by the leaves, because they're very distinctive leaves, right?
Yes, different kinds of leaves, like an elm or like a mitten.
Exactly. They look like little mittens. They're so cute. They're a great tree, and of course, they are native. They're a native tree.
That's why I like it.
Yeah, so some bird obviously flew over and dropped a seed, which is why it came up.
And we're in the area, the edge of this Carolinian area.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah, so how big is it now, roughly?
Up to the top of the roof of the house next door, which is the bungalow.
Wow.
So, and how many years has it been there, do you know?
About 3 or 4.
Wow, that's fast. All right. Hopefully it's not too close to the house, because
that's where I found this problem.
Because it gets big, eh? It's roughly 50 feet tall and 30 feet wide once it's mature.
Yes.
Be aware of that. So when you've pruned, it doesn't heal. It just turns black. Is it soft? Is it oozing? Is there anything like that?
It's not soft or oozing. It's just dry.
I wouldn't be particularly worried. I mean, normally, as you know, when we trim... So when we trim off any branches on a tree or shrub, there's something that we call a branch collar. And the branch collar is a kind of a thickening point.
Yes,
and you always want to trim just outside the branch collar. You don't want to do any damage to it. So it ends up leaving a very tiny little stump, very tiny usually, where we've removed a branch or off of any of the woody plants. So Yeah, if you trim at the right spot, nice clean tools, never trim when it's raining or super humid, always dry. Dry weather, dry day is the time to prune. The healing should take place from the branch collar, just like we scab over trees, basically do the same thing. And so if it's not doing that, you're not actually seeing any growth to heal or put that wound into a better situation, and it just kind of dries up. I mean, it's good. Dry is good. Keep an eye on it. I find that unusual as well, that it would, maybe if you can, take a picture and email me a picture of what this looks like, because I'd be interested. I know no reason why it would do that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Okay,
and
you're very welcome.
By the way, Charlie's email address goes this way, c.dobbin, that's D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. And we have to take another little break, our final break in the show, and then we're going to come back and say hi to Pat, who's calling in from Mississauga to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, as promised, let's go to Mississauga, check in with Pat, see what's going on there. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie.
Morning.
I am calling about an amaryllis plant. I hope you're not sick about amaryllis. However, I have one that's about 4 years old, and it has bloomed every year beautifully. I put it outside all summer, bring it in the dark for 6-8 weeks, and then I bring it out, and before I know it, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, there's a beautiful blooms on it, and I so enjoy this plant, and I was really looking forward to it this year because of all of the terrible year we've had.
Yeah.
However, I've got leaves, green, healthy leaves. I did not get a flower. Is that an indication that probably the bulb, it won't flower again?
Oh, it won't. Doesn't sound like it'll flower again this season, but there's nothing stopping it from flowering next winter.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. Sometimes we take them out of the dark too early. One thing I learned and really saw this year with my amaryllis, when they were in the dark, in the basement, being ignored, you know, no water, no nothing, I just happened to go into the room where they are and, of course, turn the light on to go into the room and saw the flower buds. Sticking, like they were growing in the dark. They were waking up and starting to shoot those flowers up because they knew it was time to get going. So as soon as I saw that, I immediately brought them, the ones where the flower was showing, upstairs into the light and watered them, of course. And sure enough, they flowered shortly thereafter. So it might just be that it wasn't in the dark long enough.
Okay. It was at least 6 or 7 weeks, but however...
Go more for 8 or 10 weeks.
Okay.
But do what you've always done. Keep it growing as a green plant. Get it outside for the summer. You know, all that is perfect. And then into the cold, not cold, but the dark and the dry at the end of the summer. And, yeah, just mark it on your calendar so it's at least, you know, 8 to 10 weeks before. And just keep an eye on it. You never know. The flower might just start popping out on you in that dark spot. All right?
Great. I won't send it to heaven... threatened it, but I won't. I love your show. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And by the way, we had an email from Leslie Morgan who was asking basically the same question. So, yeah, I hope you were tuned in there, Leslie. Meantime, we have another email here from Lucia De Favier. I messed up the name, I'm sure. De Favieri. In any case, is Tanglewood effective for tent caterpillars that attack coniferous trees? Is there something else I can try? Lucia lives in Sudbury,
right.
And they get infestations quite regularly every summer.
Right. Now, she talks about coniferous trees, which is interesting because there's no question Northern Ontario has had a huge problem with tent caterpillars ever since 2016. So this year, of course, we know that insects do, populations are very much connected through cycles. So about every 10 or 12 years, there's an outbreak of tent caterpillars for about 3 to 6 years. So there should be a lot fewer tent caterpillars this year, Lucia, in your neighborhood. And the other thing is you talked about it being in coniferous trees, and of course tent caterpillars are famous for eating and defoliating hardwoods. So in northern Ontario, the tent caterpillar prefers aspen, poplar, birch, so deciduous trees rather than coniferous trees. What should you do? Well, tanglefoot is very effective when we are concerned that insects are going to crawl up the trunks of trees to go and eat the leaves. The problem with tent caterpillars is the eggs are laid on the twigs and branches of the trees, and the eggs are there right now, and those eggs will hatch in the spring, and the little larva will be right close to where the leaves are emerging at the same time. So they don't, tent caterpillars, they may do some climbing up and down the bark, the trunks of the trees, but not the way gypsy moths do, as an example. So once you see tent caterpillars, the best thing is spray with something called BT. BT is a, believe it or not, a bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis. Following the instructions, very effective at killing tent caterpillar larvae, and they can be a really, really big problem. So keep an eye out for the caterpillars. No problem using tanglefoot if you want to. It'll certainly control lots of things like ants and other crawling caterpillars that you may want to keep off your tree. So go ahead and use it if you wish, but really a spray is the most effective way to control tent caterpillars.
Okay. Gee whiz. Look at that. Oh, the time is gone.
Whoa. How did that happen?
Unbelievable. We got the guys from Dave's Corner Garage lining up to start the engines.
Cool.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, Charlie.
Thank you, Frankie. Missed your smiling face, but loved your socks.
Gee, thank you. Sounds like a song title. I love your smile. Yeah, well, there you go. That'll give me something to work on. Oh, hey, been a ton of fun working with you once again, Charlie, and thank you to all the callers.
You're a great sous chef, right? Couldn't do it without you. Also, couldn't do it without Carlos. So thanks a bunch to Carlos for his help. All our great emails, keep them coming. Great calls, keep them coming. Love the questions. Lots of fun. Happy Valentine's Day all around. And don't forget to get out there and count some birds. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.